Quick question for you. What's a product that you think way more designers should be using? I know my answer, hands down, it is Raycast. It's like my shortcut to everything on my computer. It's how I interface with AI, how I organize my desktop, how I find the right emoji. It's even how I search for my Figma files. The more that I use Raycast, the easier it is to stay in flow while I work. And that's why I'm constantly recommending it to designers. So if you're not using Raycast yet, head to dive.club/Raycast to learn more. That's R-A-Y-C-A-S-T. Okay, now onto the episode.
I think it's important to like keep an open mind or just be open to your mind changing, like organically, not through pressure or like a scarcity mindset or like, okay, take what I can get, but through genuine, now that I have more information, actually, I'm kind of changing my stance a little bit. So in that regard, for example, like I was offered a role on Duo's monetization team, which on face value, you know, if you would have asked me 6 months ago if that's what I was looking for, I probably wouldn't have said yes in full transparency, right? But suddenly here I was with it presented to me and I was like, that feels so aligned.
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid and this is where designers never stop learning. Now, about 6 months ago, I was chatting with Amy Lima. She had recently been through a layoff and I asked her if she wanted to make an episode documenting her journey to landing her next role. Now, fast forward to today, and she recently started as a designer at Duolingo. So this episode is a breakdown of everything she learned along her journey. We get into how she iterated on her process, what she learned from her job hunt coach, and a lot more. So let's start by having Amy take us to the moment where she heard the news.
That moment. Yeah, it was a little bit surreal. I was on PTO, full transparency, for a burnout moment that I was having at my job at the time anyways. So I booked myself a little meditation retreat. It was my first one. I'm like, all right, we're gonna work it out, gonna come back feeling super fresh, ready to hit the ground running. And I think it was like 2 days before I was set to return. We were on a little boat trip, like in the middle of the ocean. And I got an email to my personal email saying that not only role, my company was being eliminated effective immediately, as in within the hour, I wouldn't even have access to my work computer and contacts and documents or anything like that, which means that by the time I finally got back to, you know, my accommodation a few hours later, it was a brick. So luckily I had a few coworkers phone numbers, you know, we made a little WhatsApp group, but it was, yeah, kind of fast and furious.
A little bit more of a reset than perhaps you bargained for.
Right. Listen, power of manifesting. Learned a lot about that on that retreat, but I was like, not the kind of manifesting. I was like, that's not what I meant, but it's powerful nonetheless. Lesson learned.
Okay. So you're in the middle of the ocean. You get home. Talk us through where you went from there.
So I guess some important context is that I had been, I mean, just in the times and in the era that we're in, I had been preparing, not like doomsday prepper vibes, but like kind of like layoff can happen at any minute, right? So like in the back of my mind for at least like the past 6 to 8 months, I had been kind of anticipating something like this happening. Even when there were no signals, I was like, could happen though. The chances are non-zero. So I had already thought about the motions I would take, like my immediate plan of action once if I ever got that news. So the very first order of business for me was to kind of like send out a smoke signal to my network. I need to let people know that like I just lost my job, like I'm on the market. So that's what I did when I got back to my accommodation. I mean, wasn't much else to do. I didn't even have access to my work computer, right? I couldn't do anything with that. So I started crafting a LinkedIn post kind of announcing my layoff and what happened. And hey, like if anyone has any help or resources or advice, I'm here. I did do that with the help of a former colleague of mine who is a LinkedIn wizard and knows all about content strategy and posting strategy and best practices. So I'm really, really, really grateful and appreciative of her. It was basically like a little war room.
It's interesting to hear how intentional you were with that post, because that's how I saw it. And it went like kind of viral, actually, like a ton of people shared and commented on it. And so there's like a lesson in that even, like, it's not just a announcement, oh, you know, feel bad for me, but like really strategizing around, I get this moment to put something out into the world and create momentum for presumably the next like months. Very interesting to hear the backstory to that.
Absolutely. And to be clear, the intention wasn't to go viral. It was just to be very intentional with, okay, like what's the goal of this announcement? Like, okay, yeah, I got laid off, but what am I looking for? I'm like, hey, if you know me, or even if you don't, please boost this post for engagement so more eyes see it. If you know of any opportunities, let me know. We work together. Write me a recommendation on LinkedIn. Like, it was intentional in the ask. Hey, your eyeballs are here. If you can do anything, here are the specific things that would be helpful, actually, if you want to do something. What I didn't anticipate was the support it did receive, like known folks in my network who were reposting and just singing my praises. And that literally generated leads, like recruiters in my inbox saying, hey, so-and-so reposted your post and said how great you are. Like, I would love to chat. That was pretty incredible, but kind of by equal measure, like I was really taken aback in a good way by how many strangers, second degree connections, reached out to me with so many thoughtful, not only words of encouragement, but advice and really, really thoughtful sentiment. Folks were sending me voice notes. I've been through this. This is how I navigated this time. Like, let me know if you need anything, a sounding board. And these are folks that I hadn't even connected with in that way yet. So I just think, yeah, it spoke to like the universality of layoffs, the human condition of vulnerability and being in that tough place. And I don't know. Yeah, the circumstances were sad and unfortunate to be reminded of that. But I just think that's such a powerful and actually really beautiful thing. So that part really felt good and very humanizing and empowering.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to the posts in the show notes because I do think you did some interesting formatting things. And the fact is, like, you asked for help. Like, you have to start by asking. And I think that that is really empowering. You also mentioned this idea of like preparing a little bit proactively. What were some of the things that you were doing in those 6 to 8 months leading up to actually getting the news?
What I was doing was preparing my portfolio, not my website portfolio, my online portfolio, which has full case studies, which are much more in depth and much more of a time investment to update. I was creating kind of a walking deck of my most recent work samples for about 6 months. It was just something I wanted to have on my back in my back pocket in case something like this happened. And sure enough, once the post did go viral, and I did have a ton of people reaching out like, hey, like, let's talk. Do you have any updated work that you can show us, resume, et cetera? I had that ready to go. I didn't even have to think about it, take a beat. I was like, oh yeah, no, it's saved. Edited, iterated for months, like super clean. Here it is. So that's something I'm really grateful that I invested in way before I needed to.
You know, there's kind of a spectrum where on one hand, you're applying to literally every opportunity, anything that comes your way. And on the other, you're much more constrained. And maybe you have a certain set of criteria that would have to be met before you'd even have a conversation. How'd you think about where you wanted to fall on that spectrum in the early days?
That's a really great question. Before I got laid off, I would definitely say it would be the latter, where I was like, no, we're like moving very intentionally, only applying to a handful of jobs. And it has to meet like this criteria. Here are my non-negotiables. And I still think that's so valuable. The reality of how I felt when I suddenly didn't have a job, and I, you know, was confronted with the reality of like what the job market was and, you know, just stories from peers who had recently been laid off, et cetera. I kind of took the former approach. So I was like casting a pretty wide net, admittedly, mostly for the purpose of just gathering as much data as I could on my interviewing materials so I could then iterate on it. And by the time I was like, you know, kind of narrowing down my focus of like, okay, here's like the short list of companies or opportunities I'm really gunning for. Maybe they're not coming my way. Maybe I'm like outward applying to them. I wanted to have had a large breadth of trial and iterating before I got to that stage. So a little bit of both, which isn't a very satisfying answer, but like, yeah, I kind of tapped into both approaches in my job search.
Well, it's interesting that you're like putting it almost on a timeline axes, where in the beginning, maybe you are more open to just putting yourself out there as a data gathering exercise. I haven't heard someone say it that way before. So can we talk a little bit more about like the systematic approach that you were taking? Like, what were some of the things that you were doing to make sure that you were learning, improving, and giving yourself the ability to iterate on your job hunt over time?
I guess kind of like the foundation of that, like what I did to kind of get myself to that place is I sought out a job seeking strategist, like a job hunt strategist. Like, it's this brilliant engineer, and he started up this kind of consultancy where he helps folks once they get laid off, yeah, just strategize their job hunt. A lot of like the hard quantitative skills around that. So from interviewing and tracking your job application, kind of like engineer brain approach to it, which was brilliant. So I kind of had like a member of my advisory team who was kind of like guiding me through that process, specifically what that looked like, some of the best tools that I learned through that process. And the program itself is called Career Compass, and it helped me tremendously. I've recommended other friends to it as well. And the biggest ways that helped me there was the concept of taking notes after every interview. At every stage, so you kind of separate it out by like companies, and then you have like a screener call. What were the things they asked? What did you answer well? Where did you get tripped up? That's an important one of like, where did you even stumble or hesitate a little bit? Like, it, you know, you didn't have like a really quick answer, or what were you not expecting them to ask? And just writing it down immediately. And how would you answer that? As soon as the call ends, you jot that down and do that throughout every stage of the interview process to round two. Like, that's a portfolio presentation or an onsite. Every single touch point, every single conversation you have, documenting how it went and, you know, where you could improve on like your answers, like based on the feedback you get, et cetera. That was huge, because then you suddenly have a written track record of evidence of like where I could kind of double down on and improve and keep at top of mind for the next conversation I have, whether it's with this company or not. And I kind of adopted those same principles to my portfolio presentation. So whenever I would present my work during an onsite, for example, at some point I got so bold as to like ask at the end of the presentation, you know, they ask like, oh, do you have any questions for us? Of course, you have questions about the company and the role. But then I would kind of just ask, how did this go? Was there anything you felt was missing here that you didn't see? I also think that that's beyond their response being just hard data. I wish we saw more iterations and explorations actually of your early work before the final designs. I was like, oh, that's good to know. Like, I wrote that down and then I added that to my deck for the next presentation. But it's also a chance to speak to any gaps maybe in your work that maybe you just didn't show of like, oh, of course, I had tons of explorations. I can send you over like a Figma file or screenshot. That process was actually very interesting. You elaborate a little bit on it. So I just think that that's like a good opportunity. But yeah, I was iterating specifically my portfolio presentation with every interview I had, both through me asking for feedback directly and being really critical thinking about the questions I was receiving live. So while they're asking questions throughout, like clarifying questions, I would read that as this walkthrough isn't as clear as it could be if you're asking a question on what it is you're looking at or the sequence of things. You know what I mean? Just like gaps in understanding. It's like, okay, I could maybe be explaining or presenting this better. So I also was very attuned to the questions I was getting during the interview process, and also working that into my presentation. And sure enough, the more I did that, the fewer clarifying questions I was getting. It was a little more beyond surface level. And yeah, I think that led to an overall stronger candidacy for me throughout the process.
I love the advice of just asking the interviewer how you think this went. Like, that's such a scary thing to do. I've never, ever done that, but it's genius.
It's bold, you know, and like you have to be ready for like every answer you get. You know, one time I got an answer that was like, yeah, you know, I'll be honest, like your design thinking is great. You're such a strong candidate. You have the energy we're looking for. I just don't know if you have this specific experience. Or another interviewer said, actually, I think you might be bored here. So it's just a good opportunity to, yeah, get more data points and yeah, be a little bold, and closed mouths don't get fed. You know, that's kind of like a mantra of mine. Instead of just wondering and drawing your own assumptions, sometimes in moments of, you don't have a lot of time or luxury to like sit around wondering, you know, it's a tight market. You got to ask for what you need.
Were there certain questions or types of prompts that were coming up and kind of tripping you up in the beginning of the process that you refined and felt more confident at the end of this whole interviewing marathon?
Maybe very specific questions about the type of work I've done, or, you know, some collaboration stuff, or, oh, was there a specific time where you did this? Some questions I heard for like the very first time, you know, if I were to hear it again, I know how to answer it now. And I would just document all of that. I think the biggest area of opportunity, and something I also really intentionally iterated on, advised through Career Compass and this program I was part of, is your personal narrative, your tell me about yourself pitch. That one, it was back to college, university level, 5-paragraph essays where you have a thesis and had a little story around it. And that I really locked in and also iterated with every interview. And I could tell because I would take the notes from the feedback I would get live during the interviews, especially towards the end. People, interviewers were literally telling me in real time how great what I was saying was. And wow, this part really stood out to me when you said these keywords. And I'm like, oh, there are keywords in here. Didn't even think of it in that way, but they're kind of telling me the ways in which my narrative was effective. And that was pretty powerful. So I think that was the biggest area where I saw, okay, this is really landing. And because I went through that process of being really intentional with how it was landing and, again, feedback, iterating, et cetera, I was able to realize that.
Can we go a little bit deeper on that point? Because I don't see it talked about a lot. We have a ton of advice of like how to showcase your work. And man, at the end of the day, like if you can't tell a compelling value proposition about yourself, none of it really matters. So like maybe for the designer who's kind of staring at that blank slate right now, I've been like, man, what kind of story do I want to tell about myself? What were some of the ways that you approached that process or maybe specific tweaks that you made that you think improved your personal narrative that you think others could learn from?
It's a really great question. And one thing that was interesting was what Career Compass recommends. I mean, I literally open my intro with, I'm gonna tell you a story about the human beyond the pixels. And I think that just speaks to not only my personal life, but also professional and, you know, how it's all interconnected. And I just go into, you know, just like the threads of me. I literally talk about my first generation upbringing, growing up with immigrant parents, talking about my hobbies and how, you know, I'm a very curious person who loves to explore my design principles and why I got into this field in the first place. Like, I'm not talking about my work at all, actually. I kind of segue into that at the end. Happy to go into specifics of, you know, my most recent roles and projects if you have any specific questions, or we'll get to that later. But yeah, just kind of wanted to paint a clearer picture of the person you're talking to, because I'm a person first, right? You know, besides just like a candidate, you know, with like a little number tracker. And that really resonates. But again, that's also very authentic to me. That's kind of how I show up and kind of hold myself in general. But I think that that's just really powerful. And yeah, maybe not as common based on the feedback I receive when I kind of take that approach, is that it's refreshing and it stands out. Everyone has work to talk about. I can imagine, my assumption is that that can get lost, you know, in the sea of applicants who maybe a lot of them come from, have similar backgrounds and similar work profiles, but everyone has a unique story. There's always something specific to you that can resonate and that someone can take away and be like, oh yeah, Amy, I remember her. This is what she's about. And oh yeah, she's got design chops, obviously, and has, you know, done XYZ work, but like, this is the person I spoke to and I'm going to remember that. And my approach is to make you remember me for me. And I'm a little more bullish on that even than the work.
Maybe we could even zoom out for a second, because I think this season of life could have looked very, very different depending on if you did just want to apply and just go crazy job hunt, or maybe you would want to take a couple months and just like learn a new skill and find different ways to invest in yourself, or maybe you would just want to rest and recoup. So can you talk to us about how you thought about like your schedule and what you wanted your day-to-day to look like at a higher level?
That's a really great question. I'll admit it was very messy and overwhelming in the beginning. Think of that in almost across two extremes of the spectrum, right? So immediately post layoff, my schedule was, it was a disaster. I was busier than I was when I was working full-time. I had a full-time schedule with zero job, like a jobless, like working woman, clown town population, me, booked and busy, 9 to 5, meetings after hours. It was crazy. And I didn't realize, to answer your question, I didn't even realize that was happening until I was already in it, you know, and that was like a big wake up call for me. I mean, that translated even to like some personal reflection of, I'm really good at keeping myself busy. I can always create work for myself and structure. And that's definitely a positive in a lot of ways. But I found myself in a position where I was completely overwhelmed, and I took no time to breathe and reset and just assess my situation in the immediate aftermath of my layoff. I totally hit the ground running. which had its benefits. I was kind of riding the wave of the post and all the leads that were coming my way. I didn't want them to dry up. I was immediately focusing on those interview skills and, you know, iterating in that process. And that was all valuable, but it did burn me out in full transparency. By the time the holidays hit, 2.5 months later, I was a fried wire. I was completely just like exhausted and not showing up as my best self in interviews, which, you know, at that point, what's the point? You know, like, this isn't serving anyone. So there's one story where there were two companies and they both were scheduling interviews for me. They were at different stages, but they were both effectively an on-site and they were both in person. So these would have been, well, one of them, it wasn't my very first time interviewing in person, but that was also another aspect of it. And a big part of why I was especially yes man during this time, because I was like, oh, I'm a pandemic design baby. I need to practice these like IRL interview skills. Like, what does presenting in a room look like for my presentation? I wanted to invest in that. So I said yes to these two companies for these in-person interviews. They were in the same building and for the same day. And that those are just like the days they offered. And I was just like, kind of weird, but could be a great story. Not to say I did it for the bid, but like that did cross my mind a little bit of like, okay, I'm not going to say no. So since I'm going to say yes anyways, like, let's just like do it. And it did make sense logistically, right? Like, this place was far from my house. I was like, okay, if I need to like make a trek, like just have it be a full marathon day, that's fine. How hard could it be? I would have just enough time to just feed myself in between these two. So it's okay, I'm not going to die. Like, I can do it. But dear listener, the spoiler alert is it was rough. It was not an advisable approach that I would recommend. I think it was like 2.5 hours for one and 3 hours for the other. So it was a full day. And by the time I got, obviously, to the second company, it didn't help that this was a company I wasn't very enthusiastic about, wasn't connected with their product mutually. I didn't think it was a good fit. I knew this before I got there on that day. So I'm already exhausted, had been interviewing for hours, drained, tired. I walk into this dreary, windowless, like co-working room in this big building, and I need to sit down and have a live design challenge, a live 2.5 hour design prompt in Figma that I haven't touched in weeks at that point. It was terrible. That was a mistake. That was an incorrect thing to do. And that was just the beginning. I had 2 more hours interviewing there and meeting the entire team that I just wasn't excited about the product. Like, I shouldn't have been there. I wasted all of our time that day. Clown town behavior. So that was, yeah, it's a fun story though. It's a great story for a podcast amongst friends. But at the time, like, I mean, it took me like a week to recover from that day, like spiritually, emotionally, physically. Not recommended, even though it sounds like, okay, two birds, one stone, opportunity cost is much higher. So that was one extreme that I didn't manage super well because I just got lost in the sauce and didn't realize it until it was a little too late. Immediately after, though, I course corrected, I guess, in a pretty big way. I did take the time off to just like clear my slate, rest, and just like deeply meditate on what I wanted, what I needed, where I was at in life. I took an extended amount of time to spend with my family in Brazil. I typically spend the holidays there anyways every year. So that was happening regardless, with or without a job. But I ended up extending my trip, seeing as I didn't have a job to go back to. And it was really during that time that I had the space and just like the rest, just the time to like take for myself, which was so valuable. I can't emphasize enough how transformative that was. And I took full advantage of that. Two, I ended up going on a little like backpacking trip with a former coworker of mine, actually, which was so sick. We hiked Machu Picchu together and went to Argentina and had this like crazy, cool adventure. And I learned so much about just what the power of work colleagues could even be and those work relationships translating to lifelong, you know, friendships and what's authentic to me in a workplace and being able to connect with folks like that and foster those relationships and really think deeply about what I wanted my next steps to be. And ultimately, it was during that trip, actually, that I accepted an offer for my new role. And I really do credit me having that time to just reset my nervous system, first of all, and just, you know, take a beat and think about everything that had happened, what I wanted, what I needed. I was in the, only then was I feel, in the right headspace to fully assess and enthusiastically accept an offer that was coming my way. I wouldn't, I'll be honest, I don't think I would have trusted my judgment if I had done that when I was in like the crazy, crazy spiral of it. I was just so clouded and just, you know, hamster wheel inertia, like not slowing down, that I think I needed that time. So I guess to answer your question, like, that was one thing I wasn't very intentional with, was I guess like my time management and thinking about that in any sort of balanced way. It got a little out of control in the beginning, and I faced the consequences of that and just like the exhaustion and weight of it all. And, you know, eventually once I realized that, I was able to course correct. But that's definitely a big takeaway, should I find myself in this position again, is to try to cultivate that balance, that true balance, not one extreme to the other, but early on, and find that harmony.
You talk about this idea of interviewing your interviewers. So I'm curious, what did that look like for Duolingo? And at the end of the day, what did you notice that made you confident that this was a great role for you?
That's such a great question. I think that means a lot of things, right? And some of that is like, okay, like what's authentic to you? In other words, what do you prioritize from a workplace or a job opportunity that you just want to make sure y'all are on the same page or not about? For me, a lot of that was design culture. That's everything from like team rituals to opportunities for growth to product vision and strong design vision from the design leader of the company, of like, okay, does this person instill trust and excitement and, you know, enthusiasm of, okay, this, I want to work for this person. And that, I mean, you know, in that regard, Duolingo, my God, the head of design at Duo is just so sharp, was immediately like so poignant in everything he was saying, like, you know, runs a super tight ship. I wanted to work for this person, you know, so that's kind of one domain. I ask about specifics of like the actual role and team, like the types of projects. I'm interested in a lot of 0 to 1, you know, very ambiguous, like problem spaces, for example. Are there opportunities to do full feature work, or is it very incremental? So that was another, you know, way that Duo hit it across the park. I was told that, yeah, it would be a lot of big scope projects. Not only that, but I would get to collaborate across the entire org, which was hugely important to me. Like, I've been lucky and fortunate that those have been my work experiences up until this point. But just that cross-functional collaboration is super exciting for me. That was another alignment there. And then, yeah, more specifics that I spoke to a senior IC about was just, yeah, what the day-to-day looks like. Is it super meeting heavy? What do design crits look like? What's the project approval process? Who suggests new projects? Like, where does that idea pipeline come from? Is it collaborative? Is it top-down? So really kind of like going deep, you know, and I was asking these questions even after I got a written offer. So not only during the interview process, where I was certainly asking all of these questions as well, but once you get an offer, in my case, it was also a little more specific that I was kind of interviewing for the company and not a specific role and team. And so when I got an offer, that's when I learned, oh, this is the team we think you would lend well to. And I was like, cool, I would like to know more about this team specifically and how it operates and who the design manager is. They weren't part of my interview loops, you know, when you're empowered to do that. And at least in my experience, like I've actually gone through this process, like with all the companies I've worked for, I've always asked for additional interviews after getting an offer. They've always been very enthusiastic and accommodating to that request. And they're happy to answer any questions you need for you to make your most informed decision. And yeah, I don't know, the tone kind of changes a little bit as well. When you have an offer, there's a little less pressure there. You know, they're not even trying to sell you so much, but you almost feel like you might be a colleague. You're so close. It's here if you want it, you know? So they're even more open and, you know, off the cuff. And it's just a great opportunity to learn more. So really, again, yeah, just asking for what you need, asking the really deep, bold questions of, this is what I hope for in my next role. Like, is this a place where I can achieve that? And I'm very, very, very grateful and fortunate that Duo, I mean, they answered all of my questions stupendously. It really seems like a dream opportunity. I can't even believe it.
I've never heard of someone asking for additional interviews after an offer. It's just another one of those things that, and when you say it, I'm like, yeah, that makes total sense. Still, I haven't actually heard of it. So that is inspiring. You also told me that you negotiated the offer, which is another one of those things that we just like don't really talk about as designers. It's a little bit scary even. So how did you approach that?
The reason it's so scary and why so many of us don't do it is because we actually don't really talk about it, right? I think that's very intentional in the culture, but that's like a different conversation. But that's why it's important to talk about, because then it's normalized and just part of the process, right? That was actually part of my job seeking advisory board. I contracted a salary negotiator. I've also done this for all of my roles. I used Levels, FYI. They have, you know, their salary transparency database there, but they also have a salary negotiation product that they offer. So you're paired with a negotiation coach that takes you through the whole process. So like I tapped in on them. I talked about what was important to me, compensation and benefits wise, et cetera. The lead up is always scarier than the actual ask still every time. I mean, I sound like so empowered and like, oh yeah, I do this. But you know, I like send the email and like throw my phone across the room and like hyperventilate for like the rest of the day. And like, you know, I'm in a fugue state like every single time. And then of course the recruiter responds like, oh, LOL, no problem. Like I'll get back to you sent from the iPhone. It's like, it's literally part of their job. And I think remembering that is that it's not only fine that you negotiate, but also like an expectation. So I almost see it as, I keep using the word due diligence, but I feel like I present myself in a better, more professional way when I go through that process of, yeah, like I know what this dance is. Like, I know that this is like not a personal affront to anyone. This is just numbers. Y'all are used to this. Like, it's totally fine. I'm not scared to ask, even though I am. I still do it. I don't need to like shy away from that. And like, I think that makes me come off in a certain way as like a candidate. And that was actually validated. I mean, I ended up having a really close relationship with the wonderful recruiter at Duo. But she, you know, she even told me, she was like, oh yeah, just let the team know that, you know, we're in the negotiation stage. Everyone is really proud of you, by the way. Like, get that bad girl. Like, I mean, coolest team ever, right? Like, that's obviously like such a privilege to be stepping into a space where like that's valued and there's a culture of that. But that was a big learning moment, even for me. Like, this is so okay that people are even colloquial about it. Again, it depends on the culture, but like it can even be celebrated. Like, I feel like my negotiation was even celebrated in that moment. And that was like, damn. And here I was nervous to even do it. And some peers don't do it at all.
I want to zoom out and make some space for more reflective questions. And the first is, you know, at the beginning, I would imagine you had like the list of qualities that you're probably looking for. You want to be on this type of org or team size, things like that. You probably had like your list of non-negotiables. My question is, over the months of going through this process, what were some of the ways that list evolved now that you're on the other end of having a signed offer?
Oh, that is such a great question. At the start of the process, I was remote only girly for life. I was very aware that that was going to be a hard role to land. Like those opportunities are more and more scarce and conditional. And I was okay with foregoing other opportunities in favor of that. I was okay with it taking longer in order for me to honor that big priority of mine. At the time, also like post layoff was a lot easier to kind of like stand strong in that than once it's like, okay, the reality of you don't have a job or an income coming in. That was the biggest one, a little bit as well, the types of teams and type of work. Of course, I wanted to be part of a sexy AI team that was like saving the world and doing like the craziest shit ever. And that still sounds fun. And I hope that there's room for me to do that, you know, in the future. But I think it's important to keep an open mind or just be open to your mind changing, you know, like organically, not through pressure or like a scarcity mindset or like, okay, take what I can get, but through genuine, oh, now that I have more information, actually, I'm kind of changing my stance a little bit. So in that regard, for example, like I was offered a role on Duo's monetization team, which on face value, you know, if you would have asked me 6 months ago if that's what I was looking for, you know, I probably wouldn't have said yes in full transparency, right? I don't have experience in that specific domain. I had my own perceptions and assumptions with what that type of work looked like. I didn't feel super connected and aligned to that. But when I was going through my second interview process, like post offer with more people from the team and the head of design, I was, wait, this is a dream opportunity for me to get to learn these kind of skills at this kind of organization, at this scale, to collaborate with such brilliant peers. You know, monetization in general is such a valuable tool set to have, you know, as a designer that's transferable across all industries, sectors, type of work, right? Especially at a place like Duolingo where it's mostly gamification and, you know, just out of the box kind of creative design thinking. And I was like, that's amazing. I can't believe that this is being offered to me. And I wasn't even seeking it out. If you would have asked me what like the job opportunity looked like, I wouldn't have said that. But suddenly here I was with it presented to me and I was like, that feels so aligned. It couldn't be more perfect. Similarly with the remote first thing, still very, very bullish on that, by the way, and like do feel strongly about, you know, in office policies. But being honest with the time I am, the moment I am in my life, I kind of looked at it of like, okay, here was a non-negotiable of mine. Okay, a remote only environment. Once I was presented with this opportunity, I was like, okay, it's hybrid. That's like a fact. That's a non-negotiable of the offer. How could this be a positive? I'm painting it as like 100% negative, non-negotiable. Nothing in this works for me. How could a hybrid work environment be beneficial for me personally right now in this moment? And I have like a laundry list of reasons, actually. It would be good for me to have in-person design collaboration. It's also my first in-person design job, actually. Those are super valuable skills. Getting out of the house more is an excuse to like invest more in hobbies and different neighborhoods. And I would be more rooted in New York, which I'm trying to invest more in my community here. And just all of these reasons where I was like, wait, I actually need this opportunity in order to honor these life values that I'm trying to prioritize right now. So I just kind of changed my mind again when presented with more information and an opportunity I didn't expect with conditions I hadn't originally considered. I was like, wait a minute, maybe my dream job looks a little different. And I think that's a really powerful thing as well. And another huge takeaway from me in this process was being open to that changing. And that's so empowering and exciting. And I think there's a lot of safety in that as well, right? Because suddenly that means that there's just so many possibilities for you to land in a place that is true to you and is exciting and like exactly where you need to be in that moment. And sometimes you really have no way of knowing what that looks like until you get there. You know what I mean? You can like have an idea or a picture that you paint in the beginning of the process like I did. But it was only when I went through it was I like, oh, sure, it could have looked that way. It still can, you know, in another universe or down the line, whatever. But actually, this is great too.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that we're not talking about that you maybe learned through this process, or perhaps even some piece of advice that you have for someone else that is experiencing a layoff?
I guess that concept of like trusting the process, which like it sounds so woo-woo and like easier said than done. I would hear that when I was, you know, in the eye of the storm and hated that. I was like, okay, how do you trust the process when you're like literally in a tornado? Like that sucks, you know, but it's an inevitable like truth of our world that like things always play out as they should. So trust that that will be the case for you and be open to your mind changing as well and just being malleable in that way. I mean, I think that's just like a really valuable life skill in general, but especially when you're going through something like this, I think you'll be doing yourself a lot of favors in that way. I think preparing for a layoff before it happens is paramount. I was able to hit the ground running because I wasn't starting from scratch when it happened. I think this process would have looked a lot differently and been a lot more stressful and painful, candidly, if I hadn't done the hard work leading up to the layoff that, again, I didn't know a layoff was happening. But I was like, if it does, I'm ready. I would recommend that to everyone. Save your files, have your work samples ready to send out immediately. Keep your CV updated and your network, you know, lines of communication super warm. Specifically on saving your work, I think a really big takeaway I want to share is saving all of your work, like literally all of it, even the scrappy ideas, even like the projects that ended up in the graveyard that never shipped, especially those. Because when I did interview with what I thought was my dream company, I did not have what I considered to be my most impressive projects for that team available to me. And it was only in that moment that I realized, damn, when I was saving my work, I was only prioritizing projects that shipped and had measurable business impact and empirical data surrounding it. Whereas actually, still, if you ask me today, the most ambitious, challenging, meaty projects I worked on, they never saw the light of day. But I actually think that they tell a more interesting story, speak more to my design thinking, are more impressive, candidly, than the projects I ultimately shared. I mean, it did get me hired. They're still great projects, but like for, you know, certain kinds of teams or at least the ones I was interviewing with, I was like, damn, I'm leaving some stuff on the table because I just didn't save my work. So there's something about, you know, unfinished or unshipped projects being just as, if not more valuable than shipped projects. So I think that's like a big just tactical takeaway. And more than anything, yeah, just give yourself grace and space. I sound like I did now, you know, in this conversation, but while I was going through it, I'll be honest, I was super hard on myself. I was, you know, I mean, burning out. I was a fried wire, you know what I mean? I like didn't have that time to just like take a beat and reset, especially when the layoff still happened. So giving yourself that time to just grieve, you know, reflect on what it is you want, what it is you really want to honor in this next chapter of your life, not just professionally, but personally, what big life moments are happening and like, how does work fit into that? Again, just this like holistic thinking with everything that you do, I think is the best thing you can do during this time. Because at the end of the day, it is precious time, right? It's so rare that we have like free time, even if the circumstances aren't great, right? You're laid off. There's a lot of panic and insecurity that comes with that. But in our world where it's just go, 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 having some actual space to breathe is such a precious and finite resource. So I think utilizing it for like that kind of contemplation is just the best gift you can give yourself.
So how did you balance this need to like upskill and like, you know, make the most of the time to learn new skills versus just like actually taking some much needed rest?
I think it's interesting because I felt that pressure even while I was still employed, right? That like baseline level of what's the next thing? How can I upskill? Like, what else can I add to my toolkit is always there. But especially when I got laid off, it almost felt like kind of like a gift in some ways of like, oh, great. Like now I'll have all this time and I can finally like put it to good use. And this is going to be the time I learn Swift UI and also Framer and redo my portfolio and also become this like design engineering wizard and maybe like launch a new app. Play around with some concept project, Delulu Land, but I swear this is like literally like, and I believed it, you know, even talking about hypothetical layoff, I'm like, that's how it's going to go. Like I'll survive. It won't be that bad. And that was one of the hardest parts of my experience actually was kind of being confronted with that pressure head on. Now it happened. Now, like theoretically I have that time and I need to make the most of it and put these plans into action because I've always thought about it. I've always talked about it. You see it in social conversation among designers all the time that you have to kind of keep up with all these new tools and frameworks and technologies that are popping up. But a few problems with that. First of all, I didn't really have time, right? We talked about how I was booked and busy 24/7 on recruiter calls and tweaking my presentation and having screener conversations with folks. I didn't have a lot of time to just play around. That's at least what it looked like for me. And there's something about that kind of pressure that you put on yourself to constantly be doing more. I think it's a fine line between having a growth mindset and wanting to better for yourself, keeping yourself competitive and just growing and evolving as a designer. But it's a really thin line between that and this toxic self-improvement that kind of kneecaps you, right? Because then you'll never actually be doing enough if you're constantly on that, what is it, hedonistic treadmill, right? Of like, okay, like what's the next thing? I might be a superstar in this area, but I don't know it all. I don't have every single craft at my disposal. So what's the next thing? Actually, I don't feel that successful or fully realized in my work because, you know, I haven't checked off this box. So it was an interesting kind of confrontation for me, just even on a personal level, not just professional, to kind of sit with that discomfort and give myself that grace when it wasn't happening, you know, like a week and 2 weeks and a month would go by and I try to work on these personal projects or check these things off my to-do list and it just wasn't working. And I was getting really, really, really hard on myself. That's when I was working with a career coach, candidly, like even my therapist, and really investigating like why it is I felt like I needed to do it all, especially in an objectively pretty like traumatizing moment, you know, losing your job abruptly, like not being in that state of the unknown, insecurity, not knowing what comes next. So I've kind of, yeah, stepped away from that a little bit, like very consciously and kind of like reframed my thinking around upskilling, kind of working on these personal projects, picking up new tools, technologies, et cetera, and allowing myself to kind of explore it when the time is right. You know, that's kind of what I walked away with. Like, it's okay if it doesn't happen exactly the way and in the time frame that you set aside. For me, I think all the things that I wanted to do might look like more like serendipitous explorations, right? Of like, oh, okay, now I feel so much more energized now that ironically, I have a job. I actually think I'm going to have more time. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I think I'll have more time to dedicate to these things because I just feel more secure, more confident, more excited about the work. And I want to kind of tinker on the side. Whereas when I was laid off, it kind of felt like an act of desperation or I needed to prove something to myself. But it's a work in progress. I know so many designers struggle with this. So I'll admit I'm still checking in on how I feel about it. Every now and again, it's still kind of chipping away at me all the time. I think that's constant and sort of universal. But for me, it's a huge success, like getting better at like giving myself that grace and being like, hey, it's okay. I know it'll happen. I know I'm capable of it. I know that, you know, next evolution, that level up will come, but it's okay if it didn't happen in the exact time and way I told myself it had to.
It's such an important realization to come to, especially in today's times, because it feels like every single day now there's like some crazy new breakthrough tool or workflow or way of thinking. And yeah, like I feel it too. Every time I open up Twitter, I feel this pressure to not fall behind. Like it feels like we've never had to work so hard to not fall behind.
Absolutely. These tools and technologies are evolving like at an exponential speed. And then just like the inherent inescapable comparisons that, you know, you end up falling into, you know, just opening up design Twitter or LinkedIn. I think it's really hard to escape that and not look at other folks who seemingly are able to do it all, but you never know what's going on under the hood. You know what I mean? Like it's social media. It's not real life. You don't know how much time those folks actually have, you know, what led them to that point to be able to create or tinker or adopt a new tool or framework or, you know, launch an app or whatever it is, you know, but it's tough. I think kind of reminding yourself, like you said, that it's like everyone goes through it. It's inescapable, but also never ending. So if you don't kind of pump the brakes yourself, you're never going to be satisfied, right? With whatever benchmark you're at. There's always going to be like another level, a next thing. I mean, that goes beyond just upskilling, right? That's in your career, in your life. Like, I think it's just like a good practice to kind of take a pause and be okay with where you're at and giving yourself grace to progress at your own pace and in your own way.
Hey guys, real quick, if you know me, then you know I love products. So I want to take just 30 seconds to tell you about three of my favorites. Now, anytime that I'm designing and building a website, you better believe that I'm gonna use Framer. I made the switch recently and I'm never going back. Now, once it's time to animate my designs and showcase my work, that's when I'm gonna use Jitter. It's like Figma, only for motion design. And every step of the way, I'm gonna be using Raycast constantly. It's the cornerstone of how I use my computer and the way that I stay in flow while I work. Now, I hand-selected Framer, Raycast, and Jitter to partner with me so that I could do these interviews full-time. So if you want to show them some love, it would mean a lot. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode. Hey, since you're still listening, I caught up with Amy to check in on how her first week went at Duolingo. So, Amy, how are you going?
My goodness, I'm buzzing. It has been so much fun, exceeded all of my expectations. It's kind of crazy, actually. I was just like bouncing off the walls in the office, having way too much fun in a corporate environment. Yeah, haven't been that hyped about, yeah, a new role in a really long time. It's been wonderful. How Duolingo handles onboarding is just like very impressive from an operational standpoint. You have tons of panels and workshops and discussions from leaders at the company about everything from strategy to corporate culture to this story of Duolingo and how it came to be from the CEO and co-founder himself, right? Lots of culture building events like that. But beyond that, just as a team and company culture, it's pretty amazing. A very inspirational place, really high operators. I'll admit that part is a little intimidating. It's hard to like, you know, like keep the imposter syndrome at bay when you're around just so many impressive people. But it's been incredible. One of the nice moments of the week that I wasn't expecting to, I mean, there's a theme here, right? I don't expect these kind of moments to sort of blow up and become bigger than me, but, you know, made a little announcement post of like, hey, started a new job. Very meaningful to me. You know, it was a personal kind of post on LinkedIn, on Twitter as well. And yeah, it just kind of blew up. A lot of people saw it. It got the attention of the head of talent branding at Duolingo. Duo himself responded to my post, ended up reposting on their official like LinkedIn, 500,000 followers. So that was kind of surreal, a very interesting kind of testament to like, yeah, just sort of putting yourself out there. I mean, again, my intention wasn't to get anyone's attention in particular. I really did it for me, the little personal milestone to kind of like have immortalized on my LinkedIn. But, you know, kind of an interesting lesson in what can happen when you just put yourself out there, make yourself known. You know, that person then reached out to me personally to set up a one-on-one. So I get to connect with, you know, someone on an adjacent team and connect with a coworker that way that I might have not otherwise come across in my day-to-day work. So that was, you know, a really nice affirming moment and kind of surreal, like how many people were just kind of supporting me and cheering me on in that moment too. There were a few moments, like a few folks in particular, you know, reached out personally, you know, when they saw the announcement, just like congratulating me, like lauding me, like, wow, so proud, you know, you're such an inspiration to me. And these were folks that still, but especially when I was first starting in design, like they were my inspiration, right? As in I literally would have their portfolios bookmarked and they would be kind of my North Star of like, okay, these designers, wow, blow my mind, you know, would love to follow in their footsteps one day. And, you know, just kind of like visualizing that for myself, like these are the people I look up to. And it's, yeah, it's still kind of surreal and crazy to me that those same folks that, you know, I didn't have any contact or relationship with come back around and are like, no, girl, it's you. We feel that way about you too. Like you have a win. We feel we're winning at the same time. It's all love here. And that's, I don't know, that's been like the most incredible feeling, especially in my first week. That's already so exciting after a long layoff, just feeling like I'm exactly where I need to be in the moment that I need to be. And yeah, feel very seen, not only like with myself, but with my peers, which is just such a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful for.
I love that the story kind of bookends with these unexpected moments of just kind of putting yourself out there on LinkedIn, being you, being authentic, and then such a bigger ripple effect than you could have possibly imagined. I think that's really says a lot about who you are. So I'm so happy for you, Amy. It sounds like things are going really well.
Yeah, it's a little surreal. I mean, I guess the biggest lesson I've learned with me putting myself out there, the way in which I do it, is I guess my vulnerability sort of resonates with folks. That's kind of the feedback I get. And just in my DMs, like privately, how people connect with me and what they in turn share with me is like equally vulnerable sometimes of where they're at, or, hey, I'm going through this moment. Like, thank you for sharing this in this way, whether it's like, you know, a tough moment I'm sharing or a celebratory one, right? And now, you know, starting my new job in exactly the same sort of way, like, damn, a lot of people are rooting for me. And like, I can't even wrap my mind around it, but I do the same for everyone else, you know, so it makes sense. But yeah, it's been 10 out of 10. Can recommend. I'm on top of the world right now.
Well, I am definitely rooting for you, and I'm sure a lot of people who have listened to this are now rooting for you as well. Thank you for coming on here and being vulnerable too, and just like sharing how it really is. Like, it's super needed in the industry right now, and we really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Rid, and for allowing me to keep it real with you. I'll always do that, but I need someone to usher that in, right? To create a safe space to do that. And you've done that with every designer that you've spoken to. So deeply honored and appreciative to have shared this space with you. So thank you.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, each week I send an email to over 10,000 designers with featured resources and key insights that you can use to take a leap forward in your career. Head to dive.club/email if you want to sign up. I'll see you next week.